Hello everyone, welcome to J-Talk Extra Time. For this week's show, me, John Steele, I'm joined by Johnny Nicol. Johnny, how are you doing?
Yeah, I'm doing pretty good. There's a few less games than I thought we'd have to talk about, but yeah, hopefully we can get into them in pretty good detail. How about yourself, John? How are you doing?
Yeah, all good, thanks, Johnny. The weather is what we should probably start by talking about, since we're both in our late 30s. That's what men talk about, isn't it? It's been raining for about a week in Tokyo with no respite. Before we started recording, you said it's similar in Osaka as well. So yeah, I know people in other parts of Japan have had it really bad with flooding and stuff, so it hasn't been too bad here, but yeah, not the Obon holidays I think either of us were expecting, it's fair to say. But on the kind of positive side, from a podcast point of view, that means fewer games for us to talk about this week from J2 because of postponements, doesn't it? So hopefully we can go into a little bit more depth on the games that did take place. Before we talk about the action on the pitch, though, Johnny, you've been very busy, haven't you? Sort of producing J League content. You're like some sort of out of control AI from a dystopian sci-fi future. What can people read that you've produced recently, and where can people access this fine content?
Well, thanks very much for your words, John, but there's not much J2 specific content at the moment. I have just put out a kind of J1 roundup of where the teams all stand after the summer transfer window closed, and that's been very well received over the last couple of days. And obviously Gamba are playing FC Tokyo this weekend, and that has nothing to do with me being on this podcast, that Ben hasn't kicked me out to J2 or anything because of that. But I'll have a preview for that game up on I think on Thursday after the Emperor's Cup tie. So yeah, you can see me at Blog Gamba on Twitter, and then you can kind of click through to the website from there if you haven't already.
Very good. Yeah, definitely the hardest working man in English J League Twitter at the moment, Johnny. You need to slow down. You're making the rest of us look bad. But all good on that. Yeah, hope people get to check out some of your work online this week. Before we get to the J2 action from round 25 last weekend as well, Johnny, the transfer window in the J League has slammed shut, hasn't it, this week? I think players who are unattached, they can still sign until, I think, is it October, early October? Players that don't have a club can still be signed. But for, in terms of transfers between clubs, full transfers and loans, I think that's the die is cast now for the rest of the season, is it? So just with your J2 hat on for now, could you give us two or three transfers that you raised your eyebrows or piqued your interest over the last month or so?
Yes, it's been pretty interesting, hasn't it? And I think like some clubs we'll obviously come back to when we come to their individual game, but I just wanted to pick out like Mito Hollyhock. They've brought in six players, plus I think Shota Fujio joined just before the transfer window, and that one of those training type loans, and eight players have gone out from there, with Jelani Sumiyoshi's gone to Hiroshima. Ko Yanagisawa started for Gamba at the weekend, and Yuichi Hirano started for Urawa. And they brought in a player, I'd be quite interested to know like Mike's views on this, Takaya Kuroishi from Hachinohe. I think he made his debut as a sub at the weekend. And another team we're going to talk about soon, Sagamihara, they've brought in seven players on loan. Plus, I think Shingo Hyodo, he's one of those kind of unattached players you were talking about. For the top three, I've managed to settle on one player for each outfield position. The defender I've gone for is actually Makito Ito, who's come in to replace Hiroki Ito at Jubilo Iwata. I think he's on loan from Marinos. He hasn't started yet, but I think he's not quite good enough to start for a team like Marinos or challenging for the J1 title, but I could see him slotting in quite well in a lot of like lower half J1 defences. So I like this signing in that he can come in and get bedded in at Jubilo, and then potentially if they go up, they'll just sign him permanently and he's there. I think him plus like Ryo Takano's come in from Marinos in a full deal, and Shota Kaneko kind of controversially come in from Shimizu. I think Jubilo have made the best signings overall. Those three I think are stronger than anyone else. The other two players I've picked out were Hidetoshi Takeda from Urawa Reds to FC Rukyu on loan. I think you and Stuart talked about him scoring a very nice free kick against Kita Kyushu last week. And finally, quite a surprising deal, I think, Mitchell Duke joining Fagiano Okayama and scoring it this weekend as well. I think that's Okayama are kind of one of these teams sitting above the relegation zone. I think that signing for me basically makes them kind of safe in my mind, I think. One final one I wanted to actually mention was from Jeff, because you told Iwasaki, he was on loan to them from Sapporo and he's gone to Tosu. And he's been replaced by another player from Sapporo, Riku Danzaki. The reason I found this interesting, because Danzaki, of course, he was on loan at Brisbane Roar in the A-League for a year. And the A-League have done a lot of promotional work, kind of promoting the Japanese players in the league. So for him to do well and then go back to Sapporo and then he's been sent out on loan halfway down J2, it kind of feels like Sapporo are kind of trolling the A-League in some way. But I wonder, would you agree with those choices, John? Or is anyone you would kind of add?
No, I think that's a pretty solid assessment. I mean, there are so many moves, and a lot of them are sideways, aren't they, in the transfer window, that it's kind of difficult. I was kind of complaining to Stuart about this last week. It's difficult to keep track. I think you picked out the key ones. I think we always try to look at who has strengthened and has anybody got weaker. I think Mitch Duke, he's made an instant impact, hasn't he? Okayama, so I think he's a good choice. I think, again, we should mention, you know, is Myler going to Kyoto? And that's kind of before the transfer window, or I guess just after the transfer window opened. But I think, you can see the top two, Iwata and Kyoto, strengthening, I think, pretty much. So I think when we talk about the kind of promotion race a bit later, that's something we should keep in mind. But I think for me, I spend so much time watching J2 that I'm always interested when players from J1, you know, come in on loan or on permanent deals. I often don't know. I might know the names, but that's it. So it's always interesting to see how they fit in and how they integrate. So, I might have to get back to you on that next time you're on and kind of, but by then I'll have caught up with who's playing where, you know, and for which team. But, thanks for the insight, Johnny. That's good for me, and hopefully good for the listeners as well. So let's talk about some of the action on the pitch from round 25. Most of the games played last weekend, Johnny, but we've already talked about the weather. Not to labour the point, it's been very, very rainy and stormy across most of Japan, hasn't it, for about a week or so. So, at the weekend in round 25, one of the big games that we were all looking forward to, Nagasaki against Yamagata, that was postponed. Also, the game at Matsumoto against Kyoto, that was off as well. Along with possibly slightly less anticipated, but no less important, of course, Yamaguchi against Kanazawa. Those three games were all off due to the weather. And we also had a kind of retro throwback, a game postponed because of the coronavirus. This was Tochigi's game at home to Gunma. Everybody breathing a sigh of relief, I suppose, that we're not going to spend 10 minutes talking about this. But apparently there were a couple of, or at least one positive PCR test at Gunma, and I think they put out a statement saying that they had trouble identifying or deciding whether people were close contacts with this person or not. So they took the kind of the safe course of action, and the game was postponed. So from our initial slate of 11 matches, Johnny, we were down to 7. So in keeping with the kind of unusual feel of the round, if it's okay with you, we'll start by talking about the relegation dogfight this week, because that's where there were kind of two or three interesting games over the weekend. At the moment, the bottom three sides in the division all have 20 points from 25 matches. So from the bottom up, that's Kitakyushu, Sagamihara and Omiya. The fourth bottom side, Ehime, 1 point better off. They have 21 from 25 matches, and they're 1 point away from safety. Let's talk about Sagamihara first, Johnny. They did brilliantly to beat Kofu 2-1 at home at the weekend. There was a great start for Sagamihara, taking the lead in the 12th minute, thanks to a deflected long-range shot from Ryu Kawakami. But Kofu were level just 10 minutes later after a smart trap and half volley from their Brazilian striker, William Lira. Sagamihara got the break they needed about 10 minutes into the second half, winning a pretty soft penalty, it seemed to me. Ryuji Sawakami went down under a challenge from Ryohei Arai, and Sagamihara's veteran attacker Jungo Fujimoto emphatically dispatched the penalty. That was Sagamihara's fourth win of the season, Johnny, and Fujimoto scored goals in three of those, so I think that de facto makes him a key player, doesn't it? Jin Izumisawa had a late chance to equalise for Kofu, but shot straight at the Sagamihara keeper, perhaps should have done better. So, really kind of a rip-roaring win for Sagamihara 2-1 at home to Kofu. We should mention the conditions, pretty dreadful rain and wind. But what did you make of this game, Johnny?
This is something I'll come back to in the Omiya game, but I think this is a game like you have to win if you're a team near the bottom of the league, like Sagamihara are. Appalling conditions. That the first goal was kind of a deflected shot from outside the box. Second goal was kind of a slightly soft penalty. You wouldn't expect Sagamihara to pick up these 3 points. So this is a bonus 3 points for them. So they have to kind of make sure and kind of build on that. Kind of coming back to what we're talking about transfers, and I mentioned that they've brought in 8 players this summer. Most of them fairly unknown youngsters from J1. I quite like the look of, I think, Ryoto Kodama, the left wing back. He's coming from Tosu. And Hikaru Naraoka is coming from Shimizu central midfield, and also Yudai Fujiwara, centre back from Urawa. My only kind of concern for Sagamihara going forward, they've still only scored 14 goals in 25 games. After all those 8 players have come in, it still feels like they're hard to beat and defensively tight, but I think they brought in Riji Sawakami up front. I don't think he's any better than they already had. So I kind of wonder, goals are still an issue. And I think in total they have 10 players on loan. So even if they do stay up this season, what kind of state is their squad going to be in? Or if they go down, they have a chance to stay up. But honestly, I would be quite surprised if they were to finish 18th or higher. How about you?
Well, I do agree with you, but at the back of my mind is I don't know how many times you listened to the pod last year, Johnny. I'm sure every week, of course, but I confidently predicted. Nobody really saw Sagamihara getting promoted last season out of J3. It was a real shock for them to do that. And for most of this season, we've all been writing them off and saying they're doomed. So I'm just kind of conscious that they made me look very foolish about 12 months ago, and I'm a little bit loath to let them do that to me again. I mean, they're short of goals, that's very true. I don't think, I actually really like Yuri's work rate up front, but I think we can see at this point he's perhaps doesn't quite have the ability to lead the line in the way that they need. I think they probably will end up getting relegated, but Takuya Takagi, he's a wily coach. And Stu and I talked a little bit about how we couldn't really understand why he'd taken on that job. I think we can see now that he perhaps had enough in mind that he is sort of relishing the challenge of getting them to survive. And I mean, they've won more games than Omiya that we're going to talk about in a moment. And they're on the verge of climbing out of the relegation zone, which I don't think they've been outside the relegation zone all season, really. So I don't want to write them off just yet. But I think everything that you said, this being a bonus 3 points, Kofu were pretty disappointing in this match, I thought. And they didn't really have much of a response after they went 2-1 behind, even though there was, 35, 40 minutes left. So, I think Sagamihara have done brilliantly to win this game, but they're going to need to produce that again 5 or 6 more times, aren't they? Now and the end of the season, so that'll be really be the big question if they can do that or not. Talking about big questions about whether teams can do things or not, Johnny, we should probably talk about Omiya, who conceded a late equaliser in a 1-1 draw at home with Akita. There was a pretty explosive start to this match. Omiya's goalkeeper Yuta Minami had to make a double save pretty much straight away to keep Akita from taking the lead. But then Omiya went ahead in just the 3rd minute. Akita's centre-back Kaito Chida, only his second game of the season, of course, after such a long injury layoff. He tried to head the ball back to his goalkeeper, Yudai Tanaka, but you can't really say underhit a header. Can you? Underplayed, didn't get enough power on his header, and he ended up just setting up Atsushi Kawata, Omiya's new on-loan striker, and he was presented with a clear run on goal and opened the scoring. And it was pretty much all Omiya after that, with Kanji Okunuki particularly impressive. I thought the only mistake he made was when he should have played in Kazuaki Mawatari early in the second half, but went for goal himself, and the chance was wasted. Akita leveled, though, with a classic kind of away sucker punch 5 minutes before the end. Omiya just couldn't clear their lines at a free kick, despite having pretty much everybody inside the penalty area back defending. And eventually Ryutaro Iyo was able to force the ball home via a deflection. So again, we should mention conditions pretty terrible at NAC 5 Stadium for this game, Johnny, but it finished Omiya 1, Akita 1. For me, that's a pretty shattering late equaliser for them to have conceded. But what do you think?
This has got a bit of symmetry with the last time I was on, because again, that time Omiya had played well away to Matsumoto. Another team like Akita are kind of lower mid-table, not really doing a lot. And Omiya didn't win. And if you look at the four games leading up to this game against Akita, they'd played Yamagata, Nagasaki, Ryukyu, and Niigata, taking 3 points from four games, which actually is okay. But you then have to, this game just had to be won at home to Akita, who, yeah, they'd lost 4-1 at home to Matsumoto the week before. I wanted to kind of compare Omiya with my team, Gamba, because I think when I was on with Ben and Sam on Big Pod last month, Gamba had this big run of fixtures ahead of them. And I said, draws are not your friends. And Gamba have won 5 and lost 4. So they've taken 15 points from 9 games. Whereas Omiya is just, they play well against a good team. They get a point or 0 points. Then they turn up, play really well or play reasonably well against sort of lower half teams. And they're still only drawing games. You know, they've, like you said, they've won 3 out of 25 games. They're now in a position, they're rapidly running out of games. Any team they play that's got a mid to lower mid to relegation zone, they have to target is victories. You know, they've won one of the last 20 games. I know Kawata and Minami have come in. Kawata scored a gift in this game. Minami made a couple of good saves. But, I mean, the players were effectively there last season. They've fired the coach at the end of last season. They've changed some players, new coach. They've brought in a new coach. There's maybe been a slight increase in performances, but not really in results. And I guess it's probably not past the Omiya supporters. The Omiya supporters haven't missed it. That in J1 last month, the MVP was a player who left the NAC 5 to very little fanfare, Noriyoshi Sakai. That's a kind of move, a bit like, you know, I was slagging off Shimizu the last time I was on Big Pod with Peter Klimovsky going to Yamagata. When someone doesn't really get a chance at your club and they go somewhere else and look really good, you start to kind of wonder, it's not them, it's us, isn't it? So I think, and Omiya, they're very close to getting out. And because of the name Omiya, you can kind of see them getting out. But a lot of what's happening in the pitch doesn't see me getting out, or doesn't have me seeing them getting out the drop zone. Would you go along with that, John?
Yeah, I think I can't put my finger on exactly what is wrong there, but I think you're right. That something is obviously not right. I think the example would be if Akita go 1-0 up in a home game, you kind of expect them to go on and win it, even if it means they're grinding that out, you know, and not really doing much going forward. But with Omiya, I think even if they're 2-0 up at home in stoppage time at the end of the second half, I'm still not confident, you know, that they're going to hold on and win the game. I don't know what it is. I think looking at the squad, there's enough good players there that my conclusion is it's got to be psychological. I think I don't want to say they're all bottlers or you know, it's a bottle job, but they're known, you know, to do this. Was it Ehime last year? They were 3-1 up at home, and then they ended up drawing 3-3. I seem to remember.
I don't think you're right.
Yeah, and that was with like no minutes left, you know, virtually. So they do have previous for this kind of thing. And you know, I mean, Mike Innes and I have talked about this before. It's like you look at the squad on paper, you know, the full roster, and also any given sort of match day squad that they've put out this season, and you can't really put your finger on where it's gone wrong. And then one glance at the league table tells you everything they need to know. 3 wins out of 25 is not good enough. And we've pretty much, whoever's been on the pod with me this season, we've all said we think Sagamihara are going to go down. Well, they've won more games than Omiya now. So it's getting harder and harder to make a case for them. I think if they, what I'm concerned about is if Sagamihara go down, I don't think it makes much difference to their kind of day-to-day running of the club, to be honest. Because they've been effectively on a kind of J3 budget for this season anyway. But I think for Omiya, I already sense a lot of signs that maybe the holding company, you know, NTT Docomo, is not that interested right now for whatever reason. And I think a drop down to J3 could be very problematic in terms of, you know, cuts that would have to be made. So I hope for various reasons that they do stay up. But I also I do believe in. I do sort of want the worst teams to be relegated, because that means I'm watching better football the following year. So I'm still not sure they are one of the four worst teams, but they're doing their damnedest to change my mind. So we have to wait and see. But I think the key point. What did we just talk about? Sagamihara need to repeat that kind of performance against Kofu maybe six more times in 17 matches. Omiya, which performance from Omiya would you pick out from this season as like the benchmark performance that they need to repeat for the rest of the season? I'm not sure there's been one. I'm not sure they've played well for 90 minutes all season.
They beat Nagasaki 4-0 earlier in the season in one of those random J2 results, didn't they?
That would be the one. That would be the DVD that you put on in the dressing room before the kickoff, I suppose. But I'm very worried because they seem to be almost sleepwalking into that relegation. I think a lot of pundits like us have said, well, they'll get it together. Maybe the players are thinking the same thing. And suddenly, you look at the league table and they'll be down to, 15 games to go and needing maybe six or seven wins. And yes, it's a tall order, but there are good players in the team. So if they can get it to click and get it to gel, I think they could still pull away. But I think the manner of that, conceding that goal against Akitu was so Omiya, that you wonder if they might need a little while to get over that. But we'll see. But I tend to agree. I think it's worrying times. And then every round that goes by where they don't pick up 3 points, I think that kind of mood, that kind of malaise just gets deeper, doesn't it? Harder to get out of.
It's probably worth pointing out that last season, which I know is a little different because of the condensed schedule, 18th place in the league had 49 points. Omiya have 20 from 25 so far. I'm not saying it's been quite that high, but yeah, they need 5, 6, 7, 8 wins, and they need them quite fast, I think.
Got to pull their fingers out. Yeah, very much so, very much so. Johnny, let's talk about one more game from the relegation dogfight before we take a quick break. This was the game that Stu and I billed as a big relegation six-pointer. The match between Ehime and Kitakyushu and Sonet. So naturally, they finished with 1 point each. This game finished 2-2. An absolutely pulsating match that, to be honest, only the nether regions of J2 can provide. I'll try and run you through the main points as best I can. Johnny, Ehime hit the crossbar in about the 20th minute of this game, but they were ahead shortly afterwards. Yoshiki Fujimoto, who is very much their key player, he was too strong and too quick for the Kitakyushu captain Kota Muramatsu in a one-on-one duel. He went clean through. Fujimoto's initial shot was saved by the Kitakyushu goalie Yuya Tanaka, but Fujimoto coolly controlled and converted the rebound. So Ehime 1-0 up midway through the first half. But it was 1-1 at half-time after a superb left-footed curler from the edge of the penalty area from Takayuki Arakaki. In the 37th minute. So 1-1 at half-time. Fantastic drama right after the break with Tanaka making a superb save from Kaisei Ishii to keep things 1-1. And then in the 53rd minute, Kitakyushu went ahead. A heavy touch from the normally reliable Takumu Kawamura in midfield. Gifted possession to Kitakyushu. Yasufumi Nishimura played in Daigo Takahashi, and he finished superbly to make it 2-1. After that, it was pretty much all Ehime, and Kawamura tried to make amends for his mistake with a superb effort on the hour, but his shot came back off the crossbar. Ehime then equalised 50 minutes from full time. Kitakyushu did a pretty poor job of defending a corner, especially the goalkeeper Tanaka, and Fujimoto was able to stretch out a leg to volley in his second goal of the game and eighth of the season, I think. It was absolutely chaos after that. In the last 10 minutes, Fujimoto had a chance to complete his hat-trick, but his shot was saved, and to be honest, he should really have squared the ball to Kawamura, who was in a better position. Ehime then hit the crossbar for a third time with a header from Hiroto Tanaka, and then with 10 minutes left, Kawamura completed a pretty frustrating personal evening, missing a sitter from about 12 yards. In stoppage time, the younger Gamba Osaka Loni, Shoji Toyama, shot straight at the goalkeeper, So it finished 2-2. He was actually given offside for that chance to tie him. I don't think he was, looking at the replay. So, yeah, I'm not sure whether he's spared blushes by that linesman's flag or not. But, yeah, pulsating game, and it finished Ehime 2, Kita Kyushu 2. Johnny, I don't suppose a point is what either side would have wanted from this game.
Yeah, it's interesting because I think you and Stuart were talking about like Ehime Okayama earlier in the season, saying it was me Dortmund Liverpool, and it turned out to be a really good game. And then you were kind of playing down Ehime Kita Kyushu last week, and it was a really good game as well. So maybe we should do that more often. Sort of, they seem to produce a lot of interesting games down there in Ehime. But I think defending was very much optional for both sides here. You know, like Kita Kyushu, like Ehime's first goal is just a long ball over the top, and you kind of pointed out the bad defending from across. So just keeps happening for them. Yes, it's not great for either sides. I tend to think it might be a slightly better point for Kita Kyushu than Ehime being the away team. But yeah, I wanted to kind of ask you about this because, yeah, like you're saying Sagamihara, everyone's been saying Sagamihara are going down. A lot of people had like Ehime pegged to go down like before the season since it started. But like Ehime, like Fujimoto's got 8 goals, Kawamura's got 8 goals, like Ishii and Toyama have come in. I think once they get a goal, each of them, I think they'll start to fly. There's definitely goals in this team. They've got a bad defence, we know that, but they seem to be going, like, they'll be appalling one week and lose 5-1 and then pick up a win the next week, unlike Omiya, who are just drawing with everyone. And yeah, Kita Kyushu, I'm worried about them now the transfer window's shut, because the last time I was on, we were talking about the absence of like a central striker. And they've brought back their left backs at Fukumori and the Tsubaki. They were both there last season. Very good with assists, but there's no one to assist to. And a bit like, you know, Sagamihara, the 2 goals, it's like outside of the box and a penalty. Kita Kyushu scored 2 beautiful goals today, but there wasn't much like carving open of the Ehime defence. It's not really particularly replicable. So I feel like Kita Kyushu have a bad defence, good midfield, weak attack, whereas Ehime have a terrible defence and a good attack. So I almost feel Ehime are, if I was to pick a team now to not be in the relegation zone, I would pick Ehime. I think Kita Kyushu, I think them and, yeah, Sagamihara are my kind of 2 favourites that will definitely be in the drop zone. Am I off with that, John, or what do you think?
No, I think I to be honest, this game is very fresh in my mind at the moment, so it's probably, I've got some recency bias going on, but yeah, I think Ehime are very inconsistent, and when they're bad, they are a J3 level, but when they're okay, they're a mid-table J2 team. So it really depends on, with 17 games to go, how many times do we get the J2 Ehime and how many times do we get the J3 Ehime. If we get the J2 Ehime more times than we get the J3 one, I think they might be okay. I think, yeah, goals are not a problem for Ehime, as you've mentioned, with Kawamura and Fujimoto. I think Ehime have 2 erratic goalkeepers. I don't really like Akimoto or Okamoto. Who've been rotated to not much effect really this season. So I think they're always going to let in goals because they don't really have a commanding or reliably commanding presence, you know, in the nets. I think that's a problem. I think for Kita Kyushu, the player that I've missed the most this season is the bald eagle, you know, Disaro. So yeah. I loved watching him. But I think the player that they've missed the most is Shuto Machino up front, the kind of someone who the ball, you know, the ball can just be, can go up to and it will stick with him. I think the 2 players they've tried in that position, is it Ryo Sato?
The striker. Ryo Sato, I think it's Ryo Sato.
Yeah, he was playing for this game. I haven't seen much of Zen Cardona. The other guy who is physically more like Machino, but to be honest, neither of these 2 have looked ready for prime time J2 level. Yeah. So I think although Kita Kyushu and Sagamihara are very different in terms of style of play, one problem they share is this huge like hole at the top of their formation. You know, no kind of focal point for the attack. I fully expected them to try and fix that in the transfer window. I'm sure they tried, but I'm in agreement with you. They haven't managed to do it, and I think the same question for Sagamihara, isn't it? Who's going to score the goals? They're going to get them to like 42, 43, 46 points. I think they really are reliant on that. And it is a pretty good midfield, as you mentioned. But you can't ask. I mean, Daigo Takahashi can't do everything by himself. And yeah. I think they are short on real quality at the back as well. So I think it's nip and tuck. But if I had to pick a team, I'm with you, Johnny. If I had to pick a team right now, I think if Ehime can produce J2 football, about to state the obvious here, they can produce a J2 football more often than J3 football between now and the start of December, I think they'll be okay. But look, we've been made to look silly before, Johnny. It could happen again. So
very much so.
Good stuff so far. Should we take a quick break, Johnny, and then when we come back we'll round up the other four games that were played in round 25, and let's look ahead to the midweek games and the weekend games coming up. Extra time. Welcome back, everyone. Johnny and I have had a quick drinks break. In true J League fashion, we're suitably refreshed. So, Johnny, we're just going to run through the rest of the games from J2 round 25 over the weekend. The league leaders Iwata came from behind to beat Tokyo Verdy 2-1 at home. Verdy actually started quite well in this game. The Iwata goalie Ryuki Mura made a good save at the feet of Junki Koike as the visitors threatened. And in the 14th minute, Verdy actually went ahead. Their stand-in right back, Koki Morita, was sent clear by a pass from Yuhei Sato, and he fired the ball in off Mura's near post to give Verdy an early lead. It didn't last for long, though. Trademark free kick from who else but Yasuhito Endo made it 1-1 in the 22nd minute. Absolutely sublime technique on this goal. And in the second half, Endo was involved again as Iwata completed the turnaround. His corner kick was headed in brilliantly by Hiroki Yamada, although we should mention Boniface Nduka being caught on the wrong side of Yamada made his job a little bit easier. So it finished Iwata 2, Tokyo Verdy 1. Iwata's first win in four matches, and it keeps them a point ahead of second-placed Kyoto. Of course, they played a game more than Kyoto, with Kyoto's game being postponed. And just a little bit of side news on this game. Iwata are going to lose their defender, Riku Morioka, for about 4 to 6 weeks. He picked up an ankle injury. I'm not sure if that was during this game or in training, but he's out for a short while. And before I come back to you, Johnny, just mention Albirex Niigata. They're still third. This is after a third consecutive draw, this time 0-0 away at Jeff Chiba. Not a very entertaining game, it has to be said, and a surprisingly poor pitch at Fukuda Denshi Arena for this one. I'm on record as saying it's a great stadium, and I think that's very true, but the pitch looked very rough for this game. I'm not sure if that contributed to the lack of entertainment. Some talking points, though. The Jeff midfielder Asahi Yada had to go off quite early on with a head injury, and his replacement Takuki Funayama probably came closest to breaking the deadlock. He hit the crossbar with a free kick from 30 yards about 5 minutes before half time. 5 minutes into the second half, there was a nasty looking collision between the Niigata goalkeeper Ryosuke Kojima and Jeff's Tomoya Miki. After a fairly long spell of treatment, Koji was stretchered off wearing a neck brace, and substitute goalkeeper Kazuki Fujita came on and made his first appearance of the season. I think since this game, though, Kojima has tweeted out to say that he's okay, and Tomoya Miki also tweeted out an apology. I think it was an accidental collision, so not much he could have done. Just finally, on about the hour mark, Romero Frank had a pretty good close-range chance to score for Niigata. I think he probably should have hit the target from there, but it finished 0-0. Johnny, I know you wanted to mention some high-risk defending from Jeff's Jiang Mingyu in this game. So what do you make of Iwata beating Tokyo Verdy 2-1 and this pretty drab goalless draw between Jeff Chiba and Niigata?
Well, I might as well start with Jeff Niigata since you've just talked about it. But I agree that the pitch and the weather really spoiled this game. I managed to watch. I was going to watch Matsumoto Kyoto, but that obviously fell foul of the weather. So I was blessed with watching this 0-0. I know Jeff had a player, Andrew Kumagai, in central midfield. He's not played a lot this season, but he was very aggressive. And I noticed in the first 10 minutes of the game, three times the cameras kind of panned into him and he had his hands in the chest area of a Niigata player. I probably won't develop that point any further, but he did very much look like a kind of a drunk on a Saturday night looking for a fight in a bar. And I felt like at the start of the game, some of Jeff's aggression wasn't particularly well directed. But as it wore on, I think a combination of like their kind of closing down and aggression and the pitch kind of helped to nullify the Niigata's attacking threat. Obviously, the kind of issue you mentioned was Jang Mingyu, who I think has been mentioned a few times on the pod. He got a yellow card. From memory, we're talking about this in the green room. A couple of Jeff players had a bite at a Niigata player, and then Jang kind of jumped in and he got a yellow. But then on a yellow card, I think it's the 35th, 36th minute, the ball was played back to the goalkeeper and Koji Suzuki of Niigata's kind of going in to close him down. Nowhere near the ball. We described it as a kind of WWE move, like a clothesline, a reverse clothesline or something. He seemed to perform in Suzuki. I'm going to give him the benefit of the doubt and say he didn't want to hit Suzuki in the face. He was more putting his arm out to try and block him for whatever reason, because he was already in a yellow card and it was in the box. And I know I was complaining a couple of weeks ago because in the Gamba Marinos game, Marinos gave away a penalty and the player Thiago Martins was already in a yellow card and he didn't get a second yellow. Whereas then in Fukuoka, Hiroshima, Takaki Shichi was given a second yellow when there was a player in front of the player he brought down. Although it might not be 100% on purpose for Jang to hit Suzuki kind of around the neck area, I think it's reckless and dangerous play, and he's very lucky to not get a second yellow and give away a penalty. How about you, John?
Yeah, I think for me, what I'm always looking for is like, was it really necessary to do that? And I'm not sure if blocking off, like Suzuki wasn't, he's not the quickest, Koji Suzuki. I don't think he was in any danger of charging down that the ball, was he, or winning the ball back. So yeah, I think I agree. I'm not sure it was malicious. I don't think he was trying to hurt Suzuki, although he did knock him to the ground, didn't he? And kind of he was in a daze for a second or two. But yeah, I just think it was clumsy. Probably would be the best way to describe it. And I think Jang Mingyu, he's this kind of player who, you know, I'm not the most gifted technical footballer in the world, but I do think he does have a few issues with kind of poor technique. Like as we were talking about his tackling technique, where even when he wins the ball, the way he kind of dives in often looks a bit reckless and like he's not in control. And I think referees don't always give him the benefit of the doubt. And I think it's kind of sometimes his own fault. And I think, yeah, like you said, it was just why would you roll the dice in that situation? You know, run the risk of giving away a penalty. So yeah, I think to be honest, what Saban was saying, the referee at that point is usually looking at something else. You know, so perhaps he missed what actually happened, and yeah, maybe VAR. We don't have VAR in J2. Maybe they would have looked at that, but yeah, certainly not the not the smartest thing to do. It's funny that you mention Andrew Kumagai as being like a drunk on a Saturday night, so, because you know he famously once was arrested for shoving a taxi driver.
Well, I didn't actually know that, but I can, from what I saw on Saturday, I can definitely imagine why.
Well, that's uncanny that you sort of pointed out what he's something that he's actually done, been in trouble for. But we'll let's move on quickly before anything libelous happens. What about you at beating Tokyo Vida? That's pretty expected result, isn't it?
I think as I'm on, I have to mention that Endo free kick, which has to be up with one of the best kind of free kicks in J2 this season. As Gamba fans on Twitter were purring over that, I think they're comparing to the one he scored at the 2010 World Cup, and a wonderful corner as well for Yamada's goal. I did really like Iwata's summer kit, because I know Scotland seems to be quite cool in Japan these days with Furuhashi going to Celtic. It reminded me of, if anyone watches Scottish football, like Dundee or Raith Rovers. I felt like I was watching them against Tokyo Verde. But yeah, you mentioned Morioka as well, who we talked about last time. And since Hiroki Ito left, they've actually, like the last four games Jubilo have played, neither of those two have been in the defence, and they've conceded 7 in those four games after being so tight before that. I think once they get Makito Ito kind of integrated into that defence and Morioka back, they'll be very strong, but potentially a bit of a wobble around now. For Verdi, I noticed, because I know he's not always the most popular player on here, but Yuhei Sato is now, that's 4 assists in his last 4 games. So he's doing his bit. But I think, yeah, Verdi, I don't know what's going on. You obviously mentioned the power harassment stuff, but this summer they brought in Toshima from Matsumoto. Why, I wonder? And Hamasaki's come in from Matsumoto too. And I think you mentioned that Ryuji Sugimoto's back. It's almost like, you know, when you go into the kitchen and you're not really hungry, but it's like, I'll just have something to eat while I'm here and it's not really going to do me much good. That's almost what it feels like what Verdi are doing. Like, why did they look at this squad and think they need those three players, like Toshima especially? I do not know what they're thinking. Do you have any thoughts on that?
Not really, other than I think it's just a case of other teams around you assigning players. So you kind of feel like you have to do something and see who's available. I think Akira Toshima, I'm not sure if he's the answer. I don't know what the question is. Who is slightly taller but just as immobile as Jin Hanato is probably the question that's being answered there. So yeah, I agree. Pretty uninspiring transfer window from a Tokyo Verde point of view. But I think they're hamstrung by lack of finance, I suppose. I think given that Stu and I talked about this this kind of leak that Hideki Nagai makes the players watch kind of 30 minutes of low light reels of mistakes they've made in matches, I wouldn't want to be Nduka Boniface this week, because I think he won't be wanting to watch his defending for that Hiroki Yamada winner again. But yeah, I think perhaps it tells us something about J2 that, you know, Iwata, that's the first win in four games and they're top of the league. You know, there's not really been even with postponements and you know the Olympic break to sort of break the momentum. I think it's not exactly a sprint to the finish line right now, but they do look strong. And I think the points you made about them potentially that this might be their wobble that they're having right now, but I think there's still enough games left that they can get through it and come back stronger. So I think they did show some character as well to come back from a goal down and win the game. It was 2-1, but I think they were pretty comfortable in the end. It was a deserved win. Two more games from the slate for us to talk about, Johnny, before we wrap up. FC Ryukyu are in fourth. They're level on points with a third place Niigata, but they actually lost 1-0 at home to Mito on Saturday. This game played behind closed doors because the coronavirus situation in Okinawa in that is still pretty bad. Uncharacteristically flat performance from Ryukyu, I thought, but Mito were in pretty impressive form. The Ryukyu keeper, Kosuke Inose, had to make four saves in the first quarter of this match and one more decent stop before half-time. Mito were threatened to run riot without actually scoring. Eventually a goal came in the 65th minute, a great individual strike from the substitute Kai Matsuzaki, who'd come on about 10 minutes earlier. Ryukyu's best chance to equalise fell to Takuma Abe, but he was brilliantly denied by Ayumi Niikawa in the Mito goal when he tried to dribble the ball around him. Koya Okuda had a late chance to make it 2-0 to the visitors, but kind of very casually or sort of lazily dangled a leg at a chance that he probably should have done better with, but it finished Ryukyu 0, Mito 1. And last but not least, Mitch Duke. We've talked about him already in the kind of transfer section of the pod. He scored his first goal for new club Okayama as they drew 1-1 away at Machida. Somehow, even though this game was geographically close to some of the other ones, it seemed just wetter and windier at Gion Stadium in Nozita for this one. The pitch was absolutely saturated, wasn't it, Johnny? Okayama nearly took the lead with a header from Takashi Abe that hit the crossbar, and Mitch Duke had a close-range effort blocked as well as Okayama threatened to go ahead. Matsuda thought they'd done enough to win it, though, when they took the lead late on. The Okayama keeper, Togo Umeda, didn't do a very good job of dealing with a shot from Kaina Yoshio, and he palmed the ball straight to Shusuke Ota, who rammed it in to make it 1-0. That was with about 10 minutes left. But then Duke rose highest to head home an Okayama equaliser. That was in the 87th. So it finished, Machida 1, Okayama 1. Machida stay 7th. They're 9 points off the automatic promotion places, so it doesn't look like it's quite going to happen for them this year, whereas Okayama continue to kind of dispel any relegation fears, don't they? They stay 12th. What did you make of these two games, Johnny? Ryukyu 0, Mito 1, and Machida 1, Okayama 1.
So I'll maybe come to the Machida game first, because I think I had a question for you about the Ryukyu game. I think, like you said, Machida have been really hurt by the fact there's no playoffs this year, haven't they? Because you're looking at the table, that they're actually kind of surprisingly, they're only 9 points behind Kyoto, and Kyoto have a game in hand. I thought they were further back than that. But this would be a really quite a tough one to take for them if there was that 6th place as a playoff place. But as it is, I'm comfortable saying Machida are easily one of the top 8 teams in the division, but they're not one of the top 2. So whether they might kind of drift away once you get into the kind of round 13 after, a bit like kind of Niigata did last season when there's no chance to go up, I'm not really sure. I know Kaishu Sano wasn't playing this game. He's missed the last couple. I think he might be injured. And they had Takuya Yasui, who's come in from Kobe. He's a good signing, but when he came in, I expected like someone like Sano to leave because they've got like Yoshio, Sano, Takai, Hirato, Hasegawa. I don't know when everyone's fit. How do they make that all work with Yasui in there as well? It's definitely a lot of good options to have going forward if they can keep them next season. I think, yeah, Ota, who got the goal, he's been a good pickup from Kofu. I think that's 5 goals and 3 assists, mostly off the bench. So, yeah, Machida are fine, but they've not really got a lot to play for, I think, this season. Okayama, like we mentioned Duke earlier, I think was really important for them in this game. Duke's goal, it wasn't an Uejo goal, it wasn't an Uejo assist, and it didn't come from a set piece. So I actually forgot, Iyong-J is still at Fajiano Okayama. I don't know how long he's been injured for, and yeah, the other players have either been injured or haven't really stepped up. So I think having Duke there, at the moment, they're like 9 points clear of the drop zone, but I think they'll be absolutely fine. Okayama, I do like the look of their centre-back, Rikito Inoue. He's come in from Gainari Tottori. He seems to have made the step up very well. Maybe because he has that kind of, he was in J3 last season, he might not quite go to J1 next season, but maybe in the next 2 or 3 years. I think Tottori have missed him this year, and he seems to have settled in very well. And kind of coming to like Ryukyu Mito, I think, yeah, Mito are the kind of team that, as we know, they can go to any team and win. They can also have an off day the next week. Obviously, I mentioned 7 new players in. They looked a bit fresher than Ryukyu, who have essentially been playing the same players until people have got injured and they've got a lot of reserves there now. What I wanted to ask you about Ryukyu was, which do you think is more likely, Ryukyu finishing top 2 this season or Ryukyu finishing the top 6 next season? Like, where should they sort of divert their attentions, do you think?
I think it's a really good question. You mentioned kind of being slightly surprised that Machida are only 9 points off the top 2. It kind of, for some reason in my head, Ryukyu aren't doing as well in my head as they are actually doing in the league table. I thought they'd fallen away a lot more than they actually have, and I think it's because is that they've lost 2 home games 1-0 consecutively now. Is it Sagamihara and Mito?
But other teams are not taking advantage though, like for example Niigata and Iwata are in a slump too.
Yeah, so they're kind of still hanging around, and I mean you mentioned the kind of sort of embarrassment of riches that Machida have in midfield. It's kind of a similar story at Ryukyu, isn't it? In terms of how many kind of good attacking options they have. So I just don't think, I mean, there isn't really a huge gap in terms of points in the league table right now. So I think perhaps I'm on thin ice here, but I do think there's a gap between Kyoto, Iwata, Niigata, and Ryukyu. I think Ryukyu are maybe the least kind of convincing of those 4 teams overall. You know, when I take into account attack and defense, I think going forward, if it was just maybe the front 6, then I'm a bit more confident. But at the back, I think they struggled a little bit. I know there was a chance in the game of the weekend where Lee Yong-jik was like dribbling along his own, you know, along the byline again, and got dispossessed. Like, what are you doing? So yeah, I think I can't really answer about top 6 next season. I think what you're getting at is they're going to lose a lot of these players.
Well, I was thinking because Taguchi and Ikeda are injured, so that might actually be a blessing in disguise because they'll be able to keep them for next season.
I don't see any reason why they couldn't be top 6 next year, because I think in Yasuhiro Higuchi, they have he is in the sort of Takuya Takagi Wiley camp for me. Mm. Whereas I think he would probably be able to plug some of the gaps if they sell a couple of players, lose players. So I would say top 6 for next season is more likely than top 2 this season. But how likely it is, I'll have to keep, you have to ask me in the sort of 8 month, you know, come ask me in August 2022, yeah.
I do know from one thing I've learned from watching J2 football is do not use the set of results in one season to predict what's going to happen the next season. It never really works out that way, does it?
Or indeed one week the next, often another one. Yeah, no, but it's an interesting question. And I think, like we talked about, I mean, Omiya have picked a bad year to be poor, haven't they, with 4 teams to go down. And there's 1 or 2 teams who would be, again, just prime playoff material And I actually think if you look at the top six that we have on the table now, that will be a cracking set of playoffs. You know, if they were to take place. So hopefully, all being well. I was reading just a tangent. I think the schedule is going to be compressed again, isn't it, next year, because they have to finish in November. Is that right for the World Cup in Qatar? So whether that will affect J2 or not, I suppose it probably will. So we might find ourselves having playoffs, but then having more, you know, the 42 rounds squeezed into 1 month less of season. So when are we going to have a normal season again, Johnny? Maybe never. Feels like
for bloggers like me, because I think like from J1 from September, I think J1 and J2 are pretty sound this year, but. Yeah, like you said, getting that news that next year is going to be condensed again. It's like, it's never ending, is it?
Yeah, well, we'll talk about the Emperor's Cup in a moment. That's another bugbear of mine this year. No, but I think all the points you made have been really, really interesting. So thanks for the analysis, Johnny. We just had one quick question from possibly a new listener. It's a name I'm not familiar with, Leo Arthur Capella. Thanks for your question on Twitter, Leo. He asked, which teams do we think have come out of the blocks strongest after the kind of Olympic and summer holiday break? I think it's a bit early to answer this question, but I'll take it first, if that's okay. I actually think it's not often I say Okayama have impressed me since the restart, because they had to dig quite deep to get that 1-0 kind of grind at home to Yamaguchi. And then I think that point away at Machida in the, in the gloom, in the rain and the gloom on Saturday, that was also a really good point, I think. Yamagata have only played the one match, I think, due to postponements, but they looked pretty sharp, didn't they? Beating Jeff 3-1, so I've mentioned them as well. And I thought the first 25 minutes from Mito away at Ryukyu, their attacking football was, to be honest, from another planet. And it's not often that teams do that to Ryukyu. So I'd say that if I'm asked to pick like a segment of a game, that first 25 minutes from Mito on in this round was impressive. Is there any team that you think's kind of come out firing on all cylinders, Johnny, after the break, or is it too early to say?
Well, is a very good question, but I think it's very difficult because some teams have played two games, some have played one, and obviously I think Kanazawa and Nagasaki haven't played at all. And of the teams that have played two games, no one's won both of those games in true J2 fashion. The two I picked out was obviously Yamagata, because I think you and Stuart questioned, like, they're on that great run. How are they going to come out of the summer break? And yeah, they've come out flying. I think one point I wanted to make is because, like, everyone's talking about like Klimovsky, and he's obviously brought in the new philosophy, and he's brought them up the table. It's worth having a little look back into history, because last season Yamagata were quite fancied, but they started poorly. They were actually 20th after 10 games, and then the same thing repeated again this season. So when I was just looking at the table to kind of like prepare for this show, like if you were to say to someone like at the start of the season Yamagata will be fifth after 24 games, you say yeah that sounds about right. The way they've gone about getting there is obviously a bit different, but it's not, I think Klimovsky's obviously brought them back up to where they really should be. They were obviously suffering before, and I think that, like you guys have said, they'll be the real challenger, I think, to Iwata and Kyoto. I think if they win their game in hand, which was postponed, then they would go above Niigata and Ryukyu. So I think, yeah, at the moment, I think they've come out quite well. And I see Iwata, Kyoto and Yamagata as being two from those three would be most likely to go up. Kyoto, again, I think you mentioned it in quite a lot of detail last week with Ismaila coming in and getting the winner. Kyoto beat Machida, who are obviously a tough team. And Kyoto and Yamagata at the moment, Iwata slightly sluggish, but still in it. But I think they've impressed me the most.
Yeah, no, it's all to play for, but I think that's a pretty solid analysis. Now we can always edit this if we change our minds later, Johnny. So don't worry. Yeah, but thanks for the question, Leo. Hopefully we answered it as best we could in as much detail as we could. Johnny, if it's okay with you, we're going to take another quick comfort break now. But before we wrap up, we'll come back. We're going to look at the Empress Cup football coming up in midweek, and also just take a quick look ahead at the J2 action coming up at the weekend as well. Extra time. Welcome back, everyone. Johnny and I are refreshed again. If you've made it this far, you'll know that it's time for our kind of preview of the next couple of games, or next couple of rounds of games that we have on the slate. Johnny, we've got midweek football coming up on Wednesday, the 18th of August. I think probably by the time people listen to this, these games will have been and gone, so it's a good chance to make ourselves look foolish here. But yeah, it's Emperor's Cup, an Emperor's Cup midweek this Wednesday, August the 18th. Bit of a strange situation. We have one game which is a holdover from round three, and that sees J2 Matsumoto visiting your team, Gamba Osaka, at the Panasonic Stadium in Suita. And then the rest of the games are in round four. So everybody's kind of, we're in a kind of time warp here. Everybody else is in the future. But yeah, the round four games that have a J2 representative are Kyoto against Urawa, that match being played at Kyoto's old Takebishi Stadium, not Sanga Stadium. J2 Gunma are taking on Oita, and Gunma, the home team, it's played at Shoda Stadium. Verspa Oita, the semi-professional team, the kind of a non-league side, they're taking on Iwata, top of J2 Iwata. That game is being played at Oita Trinita's ground, the Showa Denko Stadium, which is a bit confusing. Oita Trinita away, Verspa Oita at home, at Oita Trinita Stadium. That's the Emperor's Cup for you. And just one more game, Nagasaki, J2 representative Nagasaki, they are taking on Kashima. This game is being played at Nagasaki's Transcosmos Stadium, but I think Nagasaki are the away team in terms of the schedule. So, yeah, typical Empress Cup chaos, Johnny. You know a lot about Gamba Osaka, so what do you think? What can we expect from Gamba in this game against Matsumoto? Is it going to be a much rotated side or a second string side? And are there any of the other games with a J2 team involved that you think look interesting?
It's good I can talk about Gamba Osaka and I don't have to shoehorn them into an Omiya reference somehow. But I think with Gamba's schedule since he came back from the ACL after the Corona cluster, I think I can say for Gamba Matsumoto and also Gunma Oita, this midweek game, I think they could all have done without it with their various sort of struggles in the lower half of their league. I think it'll be very much a rotated Gamba side against a rotated Matsumoto side. And yeah, most people listening to this will know the result. I think anything's possible. And honestly, Gamba, I'm sure they would like to go on and win the competition and get into the ACL next season, but I'm not sure too many people would be too disappointed if they were to bow out at this stage. Ditto, I think Gunma and Oita have just been hammered away at Marinos, and they're struggling to keep their heads afloat, Gunma as well. So I think we'll see a lot of reserve players there. Kyoto against Urawa will be quite an interesting one because Urawa have obviously brought in a few new players over the course of the summer. So whether they might try a new formation or you might see some newer players getting a run will be interesting to see. I think we picked out Ogiwara, like assistant to the regional manager. He won't be in the team for Kyoto because he's on loan from Urawa. So it'll be interesting to know how much like Cho kind of rotates things up. I have the feeling both Cho and Rodriguez will be very much focused on the league. So again, an upset might be possible with rotated teams. Yeah, Kashima Nagasaki, because Nagasaki haven't played since the summer break. So will they go out with a first choice 11 against or maybe rotated Kashima? And obviously being away a bit technically at home, that could be a chance for an upset. And probably Jubilo at Verspa Oita as the sort of cliche banana skin. But interesting to note that there are three new signings I mentioned earlier, like Ito, Takano and Kaneko. They're all cup-tied, so they can't play for Jubilo. So, yeah, it's a bit of a banana skin. But like you say, that the Emperor's Cup does do its best to undersell itself. So I'm not too sure how any of these games will go. Do you have any thoughts on that?
No, I think what I admire about your answer there is that you brilliantly encapsulated what makes the Emperor's Cup great, but also what makes it terrible. Which is we have all these interesting games on paper, but any team worth their salt is just going to rotate players. We're going to have these kind of B teams knocking off B teams potentially. So I think a wider issue is just the Emperor's Cup, in general, and it's kind of declining relevance. We'll save that for another pod, Johnny. Don't worry, I'm not going to take you down that rabbit hole now. But I think Kyoto. I mean, because of the squad rotation that you mentioned, I mean, I'm not sure if any of these games. I suppose, obviously, a non-league team like Verspa Oita, if they can knock off Iwata, that would be a kind of a Honda FC level, giant killing, wouldn't it? But apart from that, I think if any of these games go either way, I don't think it would even qualify as an upset or a shock, really. So that probably says more about the kind of state of the the Emperor's Cup as a competition. It does about the teams well. But I hope the games are good and the highlights are uploaded in a timely manner to the JFA website so we can actually watch them. So, yeah, should we move on, Johnny? Just before I let you go, we hopefully, weather permitting, we'll have a full slate of J2 games coming up at the weekend, round 26. The games are split between Saturday, August the 21st, and Sunday the 22nd. Four games on Saturday. I'll run through them briefly. Tochigi hosting Tokyo Verdy. Kofu hosting Jeff Chiba. Leaders Iwata travel to Kanazawa. That's 14th place hosting first place. Kanazawa should be well rested, of course. And Okayama against Omiya is the other game on Saturday. In the Sunday matches, Matsumoto take on Ehime. Akita host Nagasaki. Niigata welcome Sagamihara to the Big Swan. That's third hosting 21st. Mito host Kyoto. That's 10th place against second. We have Gunma against Yamaguchi and Kita Kyushu hosting Machida. The game that I really like the look of is fifth against fourth. It's Yamagata against Ryukyu up at Ende Soft Stadium. That, as we mentioned, if Yamagata win that, they're going to leapfrog Ryukyu and kind of continue their sort of great form. If Ryukyu win it, then I think that throws a real spanner in the works for Yamagata, doesn't it? So, Johnny, did I do it right? Have I picked out the best game there, or what do you think?
Well, I picked out two from the top and two from the bottom, and you've definitely gone for the box office option. I think the other game from nearer the top is obviously Mito at home to Kyoto, because like we mentioned with Mito's win at Ryukyu, there was a lot of very good attacking play, and Mito are the kind of team that they can beat anyone in this league, and Kyoto won't be able to do a lot of kind of scouting or prep work because Mito have brought in so many new players, so they have that kind of element of surprise. So a very important game from Kyoto, who I could see dropping points here. At the bottom, again, like we talked about Omiya, like targeting teams in the bottom half. And although we said like Okayama, they've improved a bit, Omiya just have to look at this game. It's away from home. Just grind out a 1-0 win. They just must get 3 points from here, I think. And the other game from the bottom would be Gunma against Yamaguchi, which I'm not sure if it would be the easiest on the eye, but I think in terms of importance for both these teams down the bottom, I think they need to get 3 points. Whoever comes out on top, if there is a winner, that's a massive, massive 3 points for them. Would you go along with that, John?
Yeah, I agree. And I think if Gunma Yamaguchi can be half as good as the Ehime Kitakyushu game from round 25, we're in for a treat. That was a fantastic entertainment. Yeah, I'm glad I wasn't the kind of defensive coach for either team. You know, there'd be a lot of people working late into the night analysing that game in depth. But yeah, I agree. I think there's big games. I think with Omiya, we are in this situation where they just have to win a game somehow. Doesn't matter how they do it. If they can get, I mean, Okayama, an obdurate opponent. I don't think it's the kind of team that Omiya do well against. I mean, they're kind of similar to Akita in a lot of ways. And they just messed up that match in the previous round. So we'll see if that experience stands them in good stead or not. I think Matsumoto Ehime does have the potential to be interesting. Because I know Matsumoto had that 4-1 win away at Akita 2 rounds ago. But Matsumoto have been pretty terrible this season. If good Ehime turn up at the Alwyn, it's not inconceivable they might have a nasty surprise for Matsumoto. So
did Ehime not win the home game 3-0 or 3-1, like really comfortable? I think I
can't remember, but that sounds right. Yeah, I mean, pretty much everyone that's beaten Matsumoto has done it without kind of breaking sweat this year, to be honest. So I'm not being convinced by them at all. So they're never too far from a capitulation, I think. But then again, neither her Ehime. So nil-nil, most likely outcome. Johnny, thanks for your analysis. It's always really good to get you on and hear your thoughts on J2. Just finally, I think for the Nagasaki's away game at Kanazawa, which was postponed back in round 24, that game now has a new date, which is Wednesday, the 25th of August. So busy schedule for Nagasaki and Kanazawa, kind of throwing a midweek game into the August kind of hot weather schedule. I know some fans are a bit perplexed by this because there are no midweek rounds until November. So you would think there would be other places it could go into. But
I think what they've done in J1 though with Gamba is they've got all the games out the way early, because I think a few teams have, like, because obviously Gumma had the corona and there's a few J1 teams have had corona. I think they just want to get as much in the bank early to cover themselves for any potential damages later on. I think is where they're coming from for this.
That would sound logical. Yes, yeah, that makes sense. Yes. So Kanazawa Nagasaki is now going to be on Wednesday, the 25th of August. As far as I know, for the games that were postponed last weekend, we don't have new dates yet. I think they're still waiting to be confirmed. But you make a good point about the coronavirus, Johnny. I think it does seem to be, you know, the situation in Japan at the moment is pretty bad, isn't it? And I am seeing more and more. There are more and more cases in society at large, aren't there? So it's kind of only makes sense that there are more cases in the J League as well. So hopefully that won't have any too big of an impact on the schedule, which is already pretty tight. Talking of tight schedules, though, Johnny, I think I kept you a lot longer than I said I would. So thanks again for coming on. It's I think the listeners really enjoy getting your analysis and your insights. So yeah, hopefully we can talk again soon, and we can plow through a full fixture list of 11 J2 games next time.
Thanks again, John. Obviously, it was very rainy here last week, so preparing for this gave me a lot to do. I've had a lot of fun, so. Hopefully the listeners enjoy, and then I'll be on here again soon, and you might see me on Big Pod again sometime soon. So thanks very much.
Fantastic. Yes, and thanks as always to everyone who listens and downloads the pod. We really appreciate that support, and the support that comes to us on Patreon as well is really appreciated. So thanks as always for giving us your ears and your time. We really appreciate that. So enjoy your football coming up this weekend. That's all for now, and we'll speak to you soon.